Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Telfer and on this occasion I am joined by my close associate Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
And you know what happens when the Jonathan Ross and Russell brand of the Terrace team up.
Do you remember that? That was a strange time, wasn't it?
It was a news night. It made the 10 o'clock news.
So let me get this straight again. So they basically phoned Manuel from Fawley Towers,
yes.
And then started making allegations about his granddaughter, is that right?
I think Russell Brand had sex with his granddaughter and he left voice notes like to the tune of Miss Jackson. It was like, I'm sorry, Miss X. Ooh. And they made like, didn't mean to fuck your granddaughter. Something like that. It was very, very childish. But the sad thing was a very, very old and bewildered Andrew Sachs being wheeled out in front of the cameras to explain his disgust at what these two japesters had got up to.
I mean, quite funny. On one hand, quite funny. On the other hand, unnecessary, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, quite funny, but I think the furore was unnecessary. I mean, it's just a pranky.
Let's face it, you don't want to be leaving messages on Andrew Sachs' answer machine about having sex with the granddaughter. That's unacceptable in any shape or form.
Was it because it was Andrew Sachs, or is it the sentiment that you disagree with?
It's both.
Right, okay.
Imagine even phoning up a random granddad, even phoning up somebody who wasn't in a kind of old sitcom and saying, I've had sex with your granddaughter. That's unacceptable.
I like phoning up one of the guys there. I'm trying to think who'd be the last living man who was in Dad's Army. Ian Lavender. Me and you right now, Sean, will phone up Ian Lavender and make up allegations about his granddaughter.
Well, there we go. Another good introduction to the... Yeah, here we are. Anyway, Scottish football.
Yes, that's right. You're getting a load of lower league Scottish football shoved right down your throat. Sean is going to hold your mouth open. I'm going to stick a tube down your throat and we're going to pour it right in.
You are like a foie gras duck.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Listen, you're going to die horribly, but at least you'll leave a delicious corpse. That's ultimately what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's ultimately what it's all about. Now this is a grab bag episode. Sean and I will not be going through our patented and copyrighted three-team review from the Championship, League One and League Two. Instead, we are going to be looking at some things that have caught our eye over the past 7 days. We'll be talking about Peterhead's search for their third manager for a season, a mixed week for Albion Rovers and what the future lies for the Clifton Hill Club, and we'll be looking at the Open Goal Broomhill debacle and what happens next for the Lowland League's wackiest club. But Sean, we will head to Balmour, where on Tuesday afternoon, David Robertson, the Peterhead manager, was dismissed following a horrendous performance against Airdrieonians. They were beaten 7-0. Perhaps one of the most pound for pound, the most embarrassing performance any team that's turned in so far this season. Robertson last was in the job less than 4 months. The numbers are terrible. Played 12 games, won one, drew two, 5 points from those 12 matches. Scored just 3 goals, conceded 32. And I think Peterhead, it's fair to say, they're bottom of the table. It would take a minor miracle for them to avoid relegation. What did you make, Sean, of the David Robertson dismissal?
I think before we start, we should say thank you to Nery's Toe Poker. Once again, it's not just his transfer blog that is very handy. He gave us all of those Peterhead stats. He adds up numbers so that we don't have to.
You can say what you like about him. You can talk about his xenophobic tweets. You can talk about his odd face. You can talk about his peculiarities. He is useful.
In terms of Peterhead, I saw it come through on Tuesday, and I was surprised when I initially saw it, and I thought, well, do you know something? They've went from being arguably the worst team in the SPFL this season to possibly even more arguably the worst team in the SPFL this season. It certainly hadn't made them any better. However, I did think that to be in charge of a club for such a short period of time and be shown the door, it felt like there's probably more going on than just poor results and poor performances. As bad as that performance was against Airdrie, and as bad as their other performances have been recently. And then we had the interview with Roger Morrison.
Yes, the recently, chairman, Peterhead chairman.
Which would suggest that there was a wee bit, like there was obviously some, or it felt like, I could be totally wrong, but it feels like there's something quite acrimonious has went on behind the scenes between Robertson and the board.
Certainly some of the comments that Morrison made, it's very much not in keeping with what happens when a manager leaves post. You normally get a short statement on the club website where they'll say, listen, we want to place on record our thanks for Mr. X's time in charge of the club, and we wish him well for the future, and so on, etc. That certainly wasn't the case there, because he gave an interview in the Press and Journal, I think it was, that was subsequently republished by the BBC, where he said that the club had taken players, they'd signed players which they had previously been on trial, and those players that had been on trial had been deemed not good enough for Peterhead that were subsequently bringing in. I think as well I read that the board were quite split on hiring David Robertson. So it did suggest to me that all is not well up in Balmer.
When I googled the interview, I quite liked the Football Scotland headline, which said something about Peterhead chairman eviscerates 11 signings, something, mm-hmm. something, something. And you know how with Football Scotland always, they'll put one word in bold and in capital, in capital letters, which word, bearing in mind they had the word eviscerates, which word do you think they put in capitals?
11.
11.
Yeah, was 11. It 11?
Yeah, was it 11? Like, eviscerates would surely be like quite a passionate, passionate word that you would put in capitals, not 11.
I thought to an extent that Peterhead, judging by results, Peterhead had seemed to, I wouldn't use the word turn a corner, but were slowly seeing something different on the horizon, because they were still losing games. They'd drawn McKelty Hearts, you know, they had beaten Clyde, but they were still losing games, but it was by very narrow margins. Until they played Falkirk, I think they had done reasonably well to frustrate Falkirk for the first 45 minutes, completely collapsed in the second half, losing 5-0. That's bad in itself. But that display against Airdrie, I watched the highlights when they were published on Sunday morning. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was trying to think of the worst performances. Generally, there are some performances that stick out over the course of a season that are just like so bad, they begin to define badness in new ways. And I'm not talking about like a Mick Philpott kind of bad or a Fred West kind of bad. This is taking that into new and frightening dimensions. I remember a couple of years ago, Sean, when Berwick Rangers, who were subsequently relegated that season, played Queen's Park at Hampden and were beaten 7-0, I think it was, they were beaten. And that was an absolute rabble. That was like the worst performance of that season. This is on par with that. I could not believe the calibre of the defending. Like, they conceded a goal after 2 minutes to Gabby McGill. And then just after that, it was just a lack of leadership, lack of organisation, completely rudderless. And to me, it just seemed the players have chucked it here. I mean, I only watched the highlights. It's only like a 7 or 8 minute highlight package, but that's what it looked like watching back those highlights.
It felt like a continuation of the Falkirk game. So see, as much as they frustrated Falkirk and they kind of kept maybe clear-cut chances to a minimum in the first half, the week previous, see, when they went a goal down, there was still no ambition from the team against Falkirk to... Like, there was never any point in that Falkirk game that thought, right, well, Peterhead are going to come out here and maybe they now have to go for an equaliser. It was still like they were camped in their own half. There was no ambition whatsoever to kind of get at Falkirk. And Falkirk kind of had the freedom. And as you say, once they went 1-0 down, I actually thought once they went 1-0 down against Falkirk, it looked like they chucked it. That's bad enough when there's still the majority of a second half to go.
Yeah.
To go a goal down when there's still about 88 minutes to go, I mean, geez, oh, but you're right in terms of body language, in terms of shape, in terms of how people were, the kind of non-challenges that were going in, if that makes sense, against Airdrie. Nobody looked like they were particularly interested in, like, I know there's that phrase, but putting bodies on the line. I know it's like a total cliche, but nobody looked like they were that fussed. And that's a massive concern.
It really struck me watching them back. It looked like, because I've been in this situation myself, and I think I've played like this myself at points, when you're getting pumped at five-a-sides. You're playing five-a-side football, you know there's like 5 minutes left till the whistle goes, and it's like, let's just go through the motions here and let's get through this. You would say in that game against Falkirk, I mean, I can't remember the other three goals off the top of my head, but certainly two of Craig McGuffey's goals, one was from the halfway line, one was an absolutely incredible volley from the edge of the box. At least there's an element of skill involved in that. At least there's a degree of technique from McGuffey. Airdrie did not have to work hard to get those goals. And I appreciate, I was reading the chairman's statement there where he says, like, it's not over till it's over. And I do admire that. And I suppose, being that they are only 3 points off Clyde are in a bad way themselves. These are two really, really bad teams. And I suppose they've got, 8 games between now and the end of the season to try and salvage something, to salvage themselves, pull themselves up into ninth place. Do you think it's the kind of thing that's achievable?
I think they could potentially finish ninth.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I mean, they're playing each other. They're playing each other again towards the end of next month, I think.
The thing is, in terms of, if you look at the respective scores against other sides, Clyde are the team who are, yes, still consistently losing, but they're not getting absolutely annihilated by teams, whereas Peterhead are. However, maybe somebody could come in, maybe somebody could get them organised, maybe somebody could make them a wee bit more difficult to beat. I don't know if they've got the players in forward positions that are going to allow them to score goals. I know Kieran Shanks might have had a couple of decent performances at Arbroath and championships, and maybe if they could get a wee performance or two at him, there might be some goals there. I doubt it. However, the fact of the matter is, they don't need to win that many more points to finish above Clyde. I mean, let's face it, Clyde went from something like August until reasonably recently without winning a game. So
yeah,
It's not as if they have to become really good to catch up with the club that's in front of them. I mean, it is obviously now it has been for a long time, between Peterhead and Clyde. I do think, though, that that's almost an irrelevance.
Mm.
So whoever finishes ninth, whether it's Peterhead, whether it's Clyde, do I think that they would get the better of, let's say it's Dumbarton and maybe Annan and maybe Steny or whatever that's in the top four.
No.
Or East Fife. I don't think they would. As we've already said, I think Clyde and Peterhead, are, despite the fact they're in the third tier, I think they are two of the biggest jobbers in the SPFL. And I think they will, whoever is ninth will also go down with whoever's tenth.
Yeah, definitely.
However, what I would say is, if you can bring somebody in, whether it's the caretaker managers, whether it's bringing somebody in permanent between now and end of the season, even if they can go into now and end of the season with a wee bit of momentum, then at least it gives them a wee bit of hope in terms of next season rather than that this kind of downward momentum that which could carry over into next season as well.
Aye, that's the worry. I agree with what you're saying. I think we've spoken about the bottom of League One previously. I do think both teams will go down. I really can't see. I'm going to actually, tomorrow night, I'm going to go and watch Clyde versus Airdrie at Hamilton just for something to do before the Scotland game. I do want to see a bit of lower league football, so I'll go and watch that. So I'll get a good indication as to how Clyde are against I wouldn't still use the word rampant to describe Airdrie, but they're certainly capable of scoring goals.
On their day, they are rampant on their day, very much so.
Yes, they have scored 13 goals in the last two matches. Aye, that's a team that's rampant. You fancy them to do the same. So I'll get a live lander. I fancy both teams to go down. I just look at the quality there, having kept an eye on both teams, because obviously with my own team, Stenhouse Muir, in the discussion for the playoffs, you're looking at the teams above to see who you might face. And I don't think it's arrogant to say that if Stenhouse Muir finished in fourth, I'd be very confident about at least about getting into the finals, because those two teams look miles off it. Peterhead have been in the Scottish Football League, the Scottish Professional Football League, since the year 2000, and this is by far and away the worst team that's in it. You kind of look over since I've been watching football, and I think like the really bad teams that have been like on the go for the past 20 years, I'd say. You think of the teams like the Shire side, the Tenor Weekdays, the East Stirlingshire. You think about Clyde prior to, and everything that happened to Clyde in between John Brown and Danny Lennon coming in. Like, I think the team under Stuart Miller that might have finished bottom of the third division. I think of the Brechin side that finished with 4 points in the championship. I would bracket these two teams in amongst that. I don't think that's unfair to say. I think these are two of the worst sides I can remember in the Scottish Football League.
No, I think you're right enough. But then I also think you called it at the start of the season in terms of why that is. So one of the reasons that Peterhead have always been either a reasonable fourth tier side or a kind of jobbing along third tier team is that they could convince people to travel from the central belt to turn up every second Saturday, whether they're one training session or whenever they trained. And that ultimately come down to the fact that they could pay a wee bit more money than a lot of other teams that would be interested in player X. And now that just isn't there. That just isn't there for Peterhead. Mm-hmm. You'd bear in mind the cost of petrol, for example. They would have to pay a good bit more money to attract players for the Central Belt. And when you have ambitious, in inverted commas, whether it's Lowland League teams, West of Scotland League teams, that kind of option now isn't there for them. And I do think that's, as you said right at the start of the season, that's one of the reasons that they are in this predicament.
Yeah, definitely. I think that for Peterhead, I do wonder as well about Cove Rangers joining the SPFL, how that has affected them, because you'll perhaps get young guys who don't want to play Highland League football, who think they're good enough to play in the SPFL. And sometimes people can be dismissive towards like the bottom end of the SPFL and why would you want to play for, say, like Albion Rovers when you can make like 50 quid a week more playing for, I don't know, Shots, someone like that, just someone who's, so I'm just thinking a team that's geographically close by. But it's like the prestige element. And I think those people are more likely to sit up and notice you if you're playing in the SPFL. You get your scores read out on the BBC and Sky Sports. You get your name and the team lines in the paper. So there is a degree of prestige there. And I think that for a long time, players based in the northeast of Scotland, Peterhead was a viable option for them, because Peterhead have had some good teams in the past. Remember, Peterhead have won the third division and the league two twice. You know, so they've got trophies to back it up. Since Cove Rangers have come in, however, who can probably pay the same, if not more, money in terms of part time teams. And they're based in Aberdeen as well, so there's perhaps less travelling to go. You wonder if that has trod on the toes of other teams, much in the way that when Edinburgh City came into the SPFL, they perhaps trod on the toes of Berwick Rangers and perhaps took players away from their traditional catchment area.
I think that's a really valid point, actually. And I don't know, the problem is I don't know how they address it. Like, how do they fix that? Even when they're in League Two, how do they address that?
What Peterhead had done in the past, and I don't know if this is the case now, they had effectively had two training bases. They had a training base in Glasgow and a training base in, it might have been Dundee, I think it was, or maybe it was in Aberdeen. And then what would happen on the Thursday night, the players would meet in Dundee. It was something along those lines. I might be wrong. Please, if you know the answer, put it on the Discord and I won't read it. But I think that's exactly, that's what happened. Because I've done podcasts. I did Pelly podcasts with guys like Scott McLaughlin, who had played for Peterhead, like Paddy Boyle, Mick Dunlop, who'd all played for Peterhead. So you got a rough idea as to how training things work there. I just wonder if they do want to attract players, you're just going to have to completely do things differently. Whether or not you don't attract central-based players, where you just want to attract players that play in the northeast of Scotland, become a viable option, become a stepping stone for Highland League players, because Peterhead have done that in the past. The fact they're doing that now, I think Hamish Ritchie certainly is a player who's certainly not the worst of the players that they've got. Who they've done that with. I think it's you need to change how the club does business if you want to attract the decent players who can do a job for you next term.
Would I be right in saying that Elgin have kind of flip-flopped between doing things like that in the past in terms of having players train close to Elgin and having players, maybe having players that train in the central world but then travel up and maybe train once a week or like, maybe just meet on a Saturday? I don't think there is a... There's pluses and negatives to both.
But, I'm sure I read about Stranraer doing it a couple of years ago, where Stranraer was all purely local based players, and they were dreadful. Just the there isn't the same degree of quality in the southwest of Scotland as there perhaps if you're selecting players from like central based players. Mm-hmm. I know the central belt's not the be all and end all, but you know what I mean. That you've got a greater chance of signing players. If your training base is, I'm sure Stranraer train, it's Kilwinning, mm-hmm. I think it is, which is in Ayrshire. So that's far easier for people to get to than say, if you were a central-based player, say you stayed in Glasgow, would you want to spend like 2.5 hours, sometimes 3 hours, travelling down to Stranraer for training? Probably not.
No, I wouldn't.
So I think it's a thing for the remote football teams, thinking sides like Annan, Elgin, Peterhead, etc. How you address that problem. Still be able to put a competitive team out in the park, but it's convenient for players to play for.
Because definitely players at that level, being close to home is a big thing for them. Like travelling, commuting is a big thing.
I suppose though, like when you're younger, you're more likely to put more effort into stuff. I'm thinking back in the days when I played in a pop band, I used to rehearse twice a week, and that was like lugging equipment around, out the house, into the car, driving through to Edinburgh once a week at peak rush hour time to make practice, getting back into the house at 10 o'clock at night. Not want to compare playing in a pop band to being a part-time football player, but that effort that you put in, sometimes you don't think about it. Mm-hmm. You don't think about it, but the older you get and if you've got other commitments, like you've got a demanding job or you've got a demanding family, that might impact on what you start at the club.
But what you said there in terms of if you're a bit younger, but if you want to, I suppose if you want to, I don't know, challenge for titles or be in the promotion shake-up, you probably need more than just younger players. You probably want experienced players. You want better players. But then the better players and the more experienced players will have more offers that are closer to home, and you're not going to travel to the kind of outposts of Scottish football. So you, that, again, is something that... How Peterhead square that circle, I'm not sure.
I remember always a quote when I did a Pelly podcast with Grant Anderson, of course, played for both Stenhousemuir and Raith Rovers, and he had an interesting line. When he was younger, he made himself work for football. Now he's older, he makes football work for mm-hmm. him. So the teams he's played for, it's like sometimes I've ever seen him, why is he playing for that team? Because he could be playing at a higher level, but he just does it because it was convenient for him. Where they train is close by to his house and so on. I suppose, Sean, like when we're talking about Peterhead's like training situation and whatnot, I suppose you've kind of got to look at the players that they've signed. That's just not very good.
So I will add the caveat that the Transfer Marked website isn't always the most accurate, but I went through this season's transfers and just added them all up. Mm-hmm. And let's say it's even not quite as accurate as it could be. I made it, according to that website, that they'd signed 35 players this season from summer to January. The fact that they've signed essentially three teams worth of players and they still don't have... they still don't have a starting 11 that's even remotely good enough for League One is almost admirable.
Yeah, I'm on Neary's Toe Poker website just now looking at the players that they brought in the January transfer window. I think it's 10 players mm-hmm. that they've signed in that period, and I'm sure that a couple more were brought in free agents might have been brought in around the December time when Robertson came in. And you've mentioned Kieran Shanks, who I wonder how useful this experience has been for him and whether or not it's going to make him the player that could succeed at Arbroath. I don't know. I've got my doubts. But they paid money for Joshua Oyensan from Weymouth. Why did you pay money for Joshua Oyensan from Weymouth?
I mean, in fairness, yes, we're laughing and you're posing the question. Well, I'm laughing, you're posing the question. Maybe he's very good. But it feels like a curious move. I do think there's a thing about Scottish clubs where the success of Joel Newbley has made teams think that there really are a number of unpolished gems in English lower league football. But what sometimes the lower league teams maybe need to remember is that Livingston brought Newbley up. Livingston have a decent budget. I mean, let's face it, they're in the Premiership, so they are dipping into a... I think it was the fifth tier that they got him from. Like, where are Peterhead and Arbroath going to have to go to? They're going to have to go to a far lower level. Well, that's the seventh tier or the eighth tier. I don't know how many unpolished gems there are at that level.
No, and looking at some of the guys that come in, I appreciate that it was difficult for Jim McAnally in the summer there, because when you look at the guys that left, Brett Long going to Dumbarton, he's what a... Dumbarton's like record clean sheet appearance holder this season. Grant Savory went to Queen's Park.
Excellent.
Grant Savory's been one of the best players in the championship.
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown's
Rovers captain. Excellent. Aye. Genuinely brilliant.
Again, who you could make the argument that he's been one of the best players in the championship mm-hmm. this season, Scott Brown. And then Simon Ferry, who granted probably not the most exciting player, but was coaching at the club. Was a big influence in the dressing room. And then guys like Derek Lyle, Ryan Conroy, who would perhaps be you put in the same bracket, guys that are perhaps advancing their career, but are important for the dressing room dynamics and important for the way the club works. They all move on. So for McAnally, Jim McAnally, we even forgot to mention him, he'd been in the job for 11 years. He's coming into this campaign, the most difficult job of his campaign. And you when, as we mentioned, that Lowland League and West of Scotland League clubs are tapping up players that you would traditionally try and sign. I use tapping up in a sinister way, but they're able to hobble you for players that you might have gone in for. You do have to get creative, and unfortunately, that creativity didn't work. Like guys like Ola Adeyemo, Julian Carr, Rames Hefzala, an Egyptian sort of like youth player. It's like, I mean, you're going to have to take punts, but it's the how often do you see a manager like make so many punts that even remotely come off? Normally, these punts come when you're signing good experienced SPFL players and you've got a core of a squad. Then maybe you can perhaps take a punt at something a wee bit exotic for elsewhere. You don't just go to the fruit section when you're shopping in the supermarket. You know what I mean? You need to put some butter in there. You need to put a bit of meat
in there. Butter and fruit.
Butter and fruit. Yes, that's right. You don't just go to the confectionery aisle. You know what I mean? You don't just top up in Skittles. You do need like bread and milk and stuff in there.
But again, the funny thing is, so I remember doing a preview podcast a number of years now, and it was maybe, was it when Gus McPherson was in charge of Queen's Park, and they'd basically, yes, it, almost every single signing they made, we were like,
no, that's fair.
I don't know anything about these players. They brought them for kind of like, almost all of them would come to junior footballer. They're selling that's out right. with the SPFL, SPL or SPFL, whatever it was at the time. And it turned out Queen's Park had a very good season. So again, when they're bringing players, it's like, I don't know anything about them, but that doesn't mean to say that they are not good enough. However, in terms of this season and in terms of the Peterhead's signing policy, it kind of feels like almost all of them just have not been up to the standard. And let's face it, League One is absolutely fine, but it's not the highest caliber of division, and almost none of them have been up to it.
No, that's actually, I completely forgotten about that Queen's Park season. That was a squad. I remember when we were doing the Telemies Pelly preview for it, and it was like we put Queen's Park bottom of the table. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, it was me that wrote the preview for it. I was like, this is purely based on the fact that I've literally never heard of these players. But then you talk about like guys like signed, like, did he sign David Galt that season? David Galt went on to captain the club. David Galt's an enduringly popular player for Queen's Park. Willie Muir turned out to be a right good goalkeeper. Darren Miller, total arsehole, great player. Like, Brian Wharton was a useful player for them as well. So they did a fair degree of success. And I'm sure that I think they finished in the playoffs and they got promoted the following season when David Galt scored that goal at Clyde. I was there to see it. It's one of the best goals I've ever seen in the flesh. But yeah, you do wonder what happens next for Peterhead, because it is, like I say, they've, like, for so long, you can perhaps take that for granted under Jim McAnally, and there have been fallow periods. I'm sure that fans got a bit impatient when they were relegated, but then they subsequently went and won the division. And when you've used to been seen like the Peterhead sides, that guys like Rory McAllister playing for them. Rory McAllister, one of the best lower league players of my lifetime. And instead, you're signing guys, wait till I look at some of the names here to make a joke, Eli Yikwa. You know, it's... You can understand the frustration, and fair play to the fans that go over it. We said that when we reviewed the game where they beat Clyde 1-0, and I'm sure actually you said that you'd fancy Peterhead to finish in ninth ahead of Clyde that day. But you see that, and fair play to the fans for still going out and getting behind all that muck.
No, very much so. I may need to change my opinion in terms of where Peterhead will finish this season.
If they do go down, we'll talk about both teams. Like, how would you imagine them faring next season?
I mean, in fairness, we have, I think we've spoken on the podcast about teams like Dumbarton. So we thought that Dumbarton's trajectory would mean that even though they were going from the third tier to the fourth tier, there's every chance they might struggle in the bottom tier. And actually, they've actually led it for the majority of this campaign. They've not been great to watch. Doesn't matter. They've kind of dredged out results week after week after week, certainly until recently. So as much as it looks like Clyde and Peterhead are in bother and might even be at this moment in time, if you place these two squads into League Two, might be some of the poorest in the entire four divisions.
Yeah.
It still doesn't mean that they can't kind of galvanise over the summer and kind of bring somebody in and bring in even like a kind of small group of players that aren't particularly talented but are well organised and well drilled and can dig out results and don't concede goals. So I wouldn't want to write them off. However, they're not in great shape.
I think that you've summed up well, but it goes without saying, man, I wish them luck for the rest of the season. Like, Balmer's a great place to go, good place to watch football. And like I say, like, Peterhead are a club I've sometimes perhaps been a bit envious of. Like, how come you guys get to sign all the good players and we don't? It's as well as because you've got more money than us. What good is that now? Where is your God now? Where is your God now, Roger Morrison? As he says, listen, he finishes that. Please be the 12th man on Saturday. The lads need our support more than ever. And if we stick together, we can give ourselves the best chance of getting something from the game. And it finishes with an exclamation mark. Just finish up, Sean, this before we move on. Do you think Peterhead can beat Alloa?
No. And did Roger Morrison say Saturday because they're not playing Friday?
It says Saturday.
But, no, but maybe they are playing Saturday. I've not checked the fixtures.
They are playing Saturday,
oh, there
yes.
You go. They're the only team that's playing in League One on Saturday.
So you're expecting like Roger Morrison to turn up at Balmer and no one's there?
It's just almost everybody in the lower leagues, apart from League Two, is playing on the Friday. I wonder if Roger was just getting mixed up.
Yeah, I was really annoyed about that. I really wanted to go and see Stenismuir versus Forfar, but I can't because I'm going to the Scotland game. Instead, I'm not Michael Keaton in the movie Multiplicity. I can't be in two places at the same time. I can't go to the football and date Andy McDowell at the same time.
No. Or just go to Scotland and Cyprus and Steny Forfar. Would you rather go to Scotland, Cyprus, and if you had the choice, so mm-hmm. so there, you had three options on Saturday.
Okay.
You could go to
okay.
Scotland, Cyprus,
mm-hmm.
Stenismuir, Forfar, or date Andy McDowell, and there was only you and one clone.
Oh, that's good. I worry though, Sean. The thing I worry about is that if you cloned yourself, presumably you'd want to do all the good things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think I've never seen Multiplicity. I just remember seeing the box in the video store, and it's like five sassy Michael Keatons trying to get off with Andy McDowell. I think the way it works, isn't it, is what happens in the movie is that the clones, like he cloned himself to go and work, do the work, and he clones himself to go and spend more time with his parents or whatever like that. But then the clones also said, no, I want to get in an Andy McDowell here. That's what I would worry would happen. Like, I'd like to clone myself that just goes and does my job for me, mm-hmm. and then the real me can go and enjoy the fruits of my labour, while the one, like, charges batteries or so on.
Right, okay, well, but bear in mind that so there's you and one clone. So suppose you're going out with Andy McDowell, where are you sending the clone? So we know where you're going. It's Andy McDowell.
Scotland game.
The clone is going to the Scotland game. But what if they do a better job presenting the hospitality than you?
Well, I'll still get the money from it. So that's the way it works, surely. Like, is that the way it works? Like, so if I clone myself to go and do my job for me, I still get the money off it.
I don't know. You're still going to have to feed that clone. I suppose it's a drain on your resources, isn't it?
Right.
I'm starting to think that after a wee while, you're actually going to start... This clone is actually going to become a burden.
Right. Let's see. The film was released on July 17th, 1996. It received mixed reviews from critics and grossed a worldwide total of $21 million at the box office, significantly less than its $45 million budget. Uh-oh. Yeah, he basically clones himself three times.
And the clones start to want the good stuff, don't they?
That's right. That's
and rightly
right.
so. Well, I mean, rightly so.
I'm not going to read the plot.
There's no point. There's no point of
Multiplicity. Maybe that's what we should do as a bonus episode. Sean and I read the plots to middling 90s rom-coms.
I'm sure that Andy McDowell and Michael Keaton like find love together at the end of the film.
It says
I'd be surprised if they don't, if it's a rom-com.
Something to do with they set up a pizzeria.
There you go. They find love in pizza. Fine. Absolutely fine.
I remember reading someone, I might have been in a post on Pine Bovel, they might have been talking about A View from the Terrace, where they said they could listen to Sean McGuigan read out from the phone book. Well, listen, I don't know who you are, but you can subscribe to Sean and I's Patreon, where we read out the plots of middling rom-coms.
Imagine the fact that we got rid of all those kind of extra podcasts that we had for ages, talking about Still Game films.
Oh,
but we just read out like plot synopses of 80s rom-coms.
Tell you, we wouldn't have fucking jacked it anyway. I'll tell you that for now. I had to send a 15-minute podcast apologising for Jack, and I don't apologise, just read out the plot of Multiplicity. Doug Kinney works in construction in Los Angeles, and his job is constantly getting in the way of his family. Working in the wing of a new scientific facility, Doug meets Dr. Leeds, a friendly scientist who successfully developed a method for cloning humans. There we go. And so on. Maybe, you know what, over the course of the podcast, I'll just read another paragraph. So you might not get the whole plot of Multiplicity together, but it will be spread over the course of a podcast. I tell you, remember we used to do those Review from the Terrace podcasts, and it's like, this is what you have to do. I wish I could clone myself so I could have gone and have done them instead. Watch some absolutely dreadful movies. Remember Duncan Mackay doing one? He wanted to watch Zero Dark 30. And I was like, fucking hell, Duncan, it's 2.5 hours long. It's nearly 3 hours long. And I cloned myself to watch Zero Dark 30 and then just tell me about it. It's a decent movie.
But would you have been able to contribute to a podcast where your clone has given you a second-hand account of Zero Dark 30, a three-hour film?
You might as well read it on Wikipedia, eh?
Aye. Or just watch the film. Surely the cloning process takes longer than 3 hours. Just watch the film.
Aye, that's it. Me and my clone, just we could compare notes with each other. The only bit in that film that I really liked was when Osama bin Laden was murdered.
Right, okay, why is that?
I just, 'cause it was very well done and very well recreated.
No, you're right,
it was. They filmed it all in night vision in his compound.
I'm guessing that's how it happened. Like Silence of the Lambs.
If it was like Silence of the Lambs, at one point I kind of drifted off sleep. You know that way when you kind of go on Netflix and you shuggle the remote around and say, oh, it's Zero Dark 30 I'm watching, and not Clarice Starling closing, or James Gum even closing in on Clarice Starling. Do you want to talk about Albion Rovers?
Yeah, probably should.
Albion Rovers, funny week for Albion Rovers. They took a massive step forward in their bid to avoid finishing 10th in League 2 with a pretty remarkable 5-1 win over Dumbarton at The Rock on Saturday, but they took a big step back by losing to Stranraer on Tuesday night, going down 1-0 to a goal to Johnny Ngandu. Their position in League 2, let's just get a look at that. I should have written this down, but I was working late this evening. I do want to the listeners to do that. I do. I don't just podcast all the time. But now they're only 2 points above Bonnyrigg Rose. They've got a far superior goal difference, right enough, but the two teams are due to meet each other on Saturday. Yes, Saturday. That's a massive game at the bottom of... you know what? Don't come out to play unless you've done your homework. This is the easiest part of it. This is the easiest part of it, Sean, writing up the intros and all that, just to guide the listener through if you're not too familiar with what's going on at the bottom of League 2. But I did not do that, and that's what these pauses are. Albion Rovers are playing Bonnyrigg on Saturday. There's 2 points between the teams. But let's talk about, Sean, what were your thoughts on the match against Dumbarton?
I thought they were exceptional. I thought they were absolutely exceptional. And in terms of a dominant performance, a team that goes to Dumbarton, and it was 4-0 at halftime, wasn't it? 4-0 at halftime. It could have been, if not for Brett Long, albeit he might have been at fault for one of the goals. We had two or three very good saves in that second half. So it could have been even more embarrassing than that 4-0 scoring. To go there and dominate from start to finish, to play so well, and then be so, create almost nothing against Stranraer on the Tuesday evening, you would say, well, that's very unusual. But actually it isn't. Because both of us have said this season that Albion Rovers are in a kind of false position. I'm starting to think we might be wrong, Craig. I looked at the last four wins. The last four wins have been 4-0, 4-0, 5-1, 3-0. So yes, they do have the capability of giving teams a good doing. The problem is that's their only four wins since mid-November. Now, that's almost 5.5 months ago. So if you're going to only win in four games in 5.5 months, then you're going to be in big trouble. And I don't think they're in a false position anymore. I think they have one or two good players, maybe. You could even be gracious and say they might have three or four good players on their books. I think that might be about it. And as much as I... Like, we generally have this conversation most seasons. What team do you not want to be in that relegation playoff? I wasn't keen on Brechin being in it. I certainly wasn't keen on Cowdenbeath being in it. I wouldn't really like Albion Rovers to be in it either. I'm now starting to worry that they might be in it. As much as we've talked them up about being in a false position, let's face it, ultimately you're in the position that you deserve to be, and by 5 o'clock on Saturday they could be 10th in League 2.
That's I was there on, I was trying to think where to start. Do I want to talk about the Dumbarton game? I'll talk about the Stranraer game. The Dumbarton game first, Albion Rovers were tremendous in that match. They scored some really good goals, tore Dumbarton to shreds at points. And Dumbarton are one of the stingiest teams in the division. They don't tend to give a lot away. Like when they have been beaten, like well beaten, like they lost, was it 2-1 to Elgin? They were absolutely dreadful in the match, but they still only concede two goals. And even when you're not playing well, you've got Brett Long that you can fall back on to make really like key saves. He's having a very good season for them, Brett Long, arguably the player of the year. I went along to the game against Stranraer on Tuesday night because we were on Wednesday recording A View from the Terrace. We were talking up, we were building a fives team using the best players in the lower leagues. And I went along to that expressly to get a look at Charlie Riley, who I was talking about, because like his highlights reel, I mean, some of the goals that he scored this season. Did you see the free kick he scored against Elgin?
Yes.
Like that's like one of those Marcus Rashford knuckle pucks where the ball just moves insanely in the air, giving the goalkeeper no chance. So I went along to see him, to see what he'd be like. I was really disappointed with the Rovers that night. I thought that, you say that they didn't create very much. I actually thought that they played well in the first half. They had a wee 20-minute spell in particular where they looked really menacing. They lost a poor goal. It was actually quite well worked. I mean, I can't remember who was playing at left fullback for them, but he was caught out, allowed the ball to go over his head.
Devin McCall, maybe?
It might have been, yeah, I think you're right. Number 15, Devin McCall. Allowed the ball to go over his head, and there was Scott Robinson. Scott Robinson, what's he doing out in the right wing? That big dud. He was out in the right wing, and he plays the ball along for Johnny Ngandu to finish. It's a good finish. And then Charlie Riley, who didn't have his best game, it's fair to say. He did have, like, weirdly, he made an impact in the match, but didn't make an impact in the match because he drew two fouls out of Craig Ross. And Craig Ross was booked for both of them and sent off, the second booking of which came right before the halftime whistle. And you're expecting, well, Albion Rovers have probably been the better team out of the two sides here. You'd expect them to go on and go and get an equaliser and maybe even take something from the game. But watching it, you were hard. There were times I had to remind myself, Stranraer down to 10 men here, because they were really, really organised, really compact. And didn't give, sat deep and didn't give Albion Rovers a lot. And when that space turned into, which had been there in the first half, wasn't there, Albion Rovers didn't really seem to have any answers to it. And in the end, it was pretty straightforward for Stranraer, who certainly on the basis of that second half performance deserved the win. So I wouldn't be too critical of Charlie Riley for not turning it on when I was there watching him, but I was just disappointed.
I was surprised that Joe Bevan. You always have to kind of take things with a pinch of salt sometimes when you look at websites in terms of formations when it comes to League Two. But it was Joe Bevan wide right and Scott Roberts up front?
Yes.
So bearing in mind, Joe Bevan had played up front against Dumbarton, scored two, he's a young player, he's came in from Camelin, looked like he had a really good game against Dumbarton, obviously had that brace. You would presume that his confidence was sky high. It then felt odd that they would move him out to the right and then play Scott Roberts up front, who, I like Scott Roberts, it feels like he is a... I feel like Scott Roberts is a utility player, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. I am not entirely sure where Scott Roberts should play. I certainly don't think it should be up front, and to swap somebody who looks like A in form, why would you do that? I'm not sure.
Sean, I don't like correcting you, but they actually played the same light. They played the same team that beat Dumbarton, was the same
fair
team
enough,
that played against Stranraer.
I thought Bevan played up front.
No, I got talking to a player's father at the game, who was sound. I got talking to him throughout the second half, him and his wife, who are sound, and they were really nice, and they go and watch their laddie play all the time. It was Blair Malcolm's mom and dad. I don't know why I'm trying to give it a degree of mystery. like anything like that. Like Blair Malcolm is, and his dad, I remember his dad, like Craig Malcolm came off the bench for Stranraer. And he goes, "There's Craig Malcolm. Just remember, I'm the original Craig Malcolm." I didn't want to say, "My name's Craig as well." I didn't want to say, "Well, it's a town of Craigs here."
That would really ingratiate yourself with them, though, wouldn't it?
That would have been all the Craigs high-fiving them.
Or he might have moved away from me.
But Mr. and Mrs. Malcolm, very, very sound. And we were talking about Joe Bevan, and like he's not a striker, Joe Bevan. He's a winger. Like he's young, and in that when you saw how good he was against Albion Rovers, against Dumbarton, what made him so good? There was space for him to run into. See that first goal that he scored when Charlie Riley sets him in. There's about 30 yards when he catches the ball for him to run onto. The guy's rapid. Right, the guy's rapid. However, watching him play against the Barton, he was up against Finn Ekrapon, who was playing at left back for Stranraer, and all he really wants to do is get kick the ball into space. He's like the way they were playing was a 4-3-3 formation. Charlie Riley was playing on the left. He's on the right. He's right footed. Wants to come in onto his right, and Joe Bevan's left footed and wants to come in onto his left. Whereas Riley is very, very skillful, very technical, and can compensate for the fact that his left foot is weaker because he can go to the byline and chip balls in and so often. He's certainly a lot more technical. Bevan was quite limited, and he was shown up a wee bit by his limitations. Like there were a number of times where he got in behind Ekrapon and would want to come back onto his left foot. I mean, the reason I brought up like Blair Malcolm's dad, we were talking about him and they were saying that he's not a striker, he's a winger, and there's still elements of the game. And I think Bevan does have a high ceiling. There's a lot to like about him, but in terms of his like playing with his back to goal, winning headers, noising up defenders and so on, like he's got a lot to learn about doing that. I don't think Scott Roberts necessarily did that throughout the match, but when he was on, I thought that he was pretty quiet, and I think that for Albion Rovers really to get the best out of that system, you do need someone there like a Declan Byrne or like a Kyle Docherty who's now at Clyde. These are the sort of players that they would have done. I think that's what perhaps held them back was the ball wasn't really sticking up front. But then, like what I said earlier, when Stranraer just shut up shop and drained space, Bevan did not get a kick in the second half. He was very, very, very quiet.
However, they do have the best player in League Two. And do you think that in Charlie Riley, they can finish above bottom spot, and even if they did finish in bottom spot, Albion Rovers would beat whoever was the winner between the Highland League and the Lowland League playoff?
Yes, to answer both questions. I do think, I look at the... Well, answer the bottom of the table, the playoff conundrum. First of all, when I look at previous seasons, see the team that has been relegated from the SPFL, other than the Shire, maybe, like that season Shire, they weren't great, but they certainly weren't like dreadful compared to previous Shire teams. Like Brechin stinking that season, Cowdenbeath stinking that season, Berwick Rangers. Berwick Rangers are the worst side that have been relegated. Yeah. That Berwick Rangers team is the worst team that's gone down. I look at Bonnyrigg and I look at Albion Rovers, and I don't think they're as bad as any other teams that have finished bottom. And then I look at the teams trying to come up the way, and I don't think they're as strong as previous sides. I think I look at a team like Brechin or Bucky Thistle. Aye, they've got loads of points, but like the quality at the top end of the Highland League and the bottom end of the Highland League is enormous. Enormous compared to like the top of League Two and the bottom of League Two. Same with the Lowland League. These are really, really unbalanced divisions. And it's all very well, like one thing, like sticking five goals past, like, I don't know, Banks of Dee or whoever. But when it comes to actually playing like a Football League side, a Scottish SPFL side, like they're a lot better. Everything's just a step up in quality. Even though these teams are bottom of their divisions, there is, like I've said it before, big step up between the levels. And I do think the Albion Rovers will step up. And if they do finish bottom, then Charlie Riley, you've got a guy who, like look at the numbers, this is probably going to be repeated on A View from the Terrace, but he has contributed to 80% of Albion Rovers league goals, and that's through his own goals and that's through assists. Well, he's got 20 for the season, 9 assists out of 37 league goals. Which player in the SPFL is close to matching that? Or which team, in fact, switch it the other way around, which team is so reliant on one player?
I'm not just trying to catch you. I think Akinyemi at Ayr might be right, something similar. That just off the top of my head. What I would say, and I'm just going right back to what you said about Charlie Riley, and I know it's not what you meant, but you said about his highlight reel, and you're right, his highlight reel would be exceptional. But you mentioned this on A View for Terrace, like his work rate, and that's what makes him stand out. He's not just somebody who can score a decent free kick or can deliver a great ball in the box or can have a good finish. Like, his work rate's very good as well.
Yeah.
Like, he will go up and down, help out the fullback, get forward as well. He's very fit. He's talented, but he's very fit, and he's not selfish. He wants to help out going back the way and going forwards as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen him four times this season, and certainly on Tuesday night, that's the poorest he's been. Like, having seen him against Steny, like, I mean, you were there, Sean, when Steny beat Albion Rovers 2-0. In that first half, Steny couldn't get near him. I mean, he was up against Adam Corbett, and Adam Corbett's like Adam Corbett's a decent League Two fullback, but Riley had him on toast a number of times where Corbett really was in the back foot there. And it was just, I think it was a couple of changes that Gary Naismith made in the second half, right at the interval, even stopped Albion Rovers getting that space. They couldn't get on the front foot as much. But Riley was still working hard for the team and getting back and digging them out. In this game, particularly in the second half, he wasn't doing that as much. I do think that was an instruction from his manager, though. Basically, he would try and play right in the shoulder of the winger and try to get the ball over the top so he could make something happen. And I think there were times that he wasn't involved enough, and when he did get involved, he tried too hard to make something happen. There was a shout from the crowd where somebody shouted at him. I think he tried to beat someone. He tried to beat someone and it didn't come off, and he won the team a throw-in. Just because you scored 20 goals this season doesn't mean you can't stop working hard. And it's like, fucking hell, man. There is...
as if, like, in the last 5 or 6 years, Albion Rovers have had, like, just a flurry of incredible players that are better than Charlie.
In the last 5 or 6 years, Alan Troughton scored something like 25 goals in the season they were relegated. And the other thing as well I would say about, like, he's talking about Charlie Riley, just talk about Clifton Hill itself. See, on a Tuesday night under the floodlights, no exaggeration to say, it's one of my favourite places to watch football. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like when you go up the steps at Clifton Hill and that stadium emerges before you, this decrepit, useless old pit of a football ground that stinks of history, the dilapidated, unused sand over the other end, the wee bit of terracing that's just been added in behind there, the pitch was in decent nick, the big curve behind one of the goals, and it's just like, it's ramshackle, but it's great, and it just feels like it's been cut out the earth, and you're just there watching it with about 300 other punters. It's great. Love watching football there.
And I also think it's, because I hadn't been there until maybe, so see when Raith, I think it was under Barry Smith during that era, that was the first time I'd been to Clifton Hill, and I was kind of taken aback by how colourful it is. Like when you approach it, it's like, it's red, it's yellow, it's blue. It's just an incredible, almost neon sculpture that just rises out of the Coatbridge sky. No, I love it. And you're right. It's for all the reasons that we used to say that Central Park was one of the best grounds in the SPFL. Yes, it's dilapidated. Yes, it has a weird running track. Yes, it has those terrible tyres. But by the same token, visiting there once or twice a season or whatever, it's just great to kind of see it.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same with Clifton Hill.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, I prefer, if I had to pick between the two, I'd go for Clifton Hill. I much prefer watching football at Clifton Hill. And just like, I always tend to stand in the same bit, like right down the front with a, like, leaning across the barrier. And it's great. I love it. And it's probably for the same reason I didn't want to say, you talked about Cowdenbeath disappearing out the SPFL. It's the same reason I wouldn't want to see them go. It's just that I've probably spoken this before in a podcast. In fact, I've definitely spoken it before in a podcast. There are quintessential lower league teams. Like Arbroath are one. Until recently, Queen's Park were one. Until they moved out of Hampden, Queen's Park were one. Albion Rovers are one as well. It's like the name doesn't represent anything. Mm-hmm. It's like two suffixes that something's just mashed together. It's like they play in a town, like a very like Celtic dominated town. They're a real anomaly, but they're great, and they've had some really good players over the years. I'm trying to think. Like, I remember like going to a game at Clifton Hill when Albion Rovers were playing Stenistreet. Gordon Lennon was playing for Albion Rovers. It was just one of those performances where he would get the ball, dribble out of defence, like drop the shoulder, beat a man, and pass it on to someone else. And I love that feeling. Like, see when you go to watch a team, and it's like, who the fuck's that guy? You know, it's like you've seen someone that just really excites you. And Lennon's career, I thought when he got the move to Partick Thistle, I thought he would kick on even further. Didn't work out. Goes to Dumbarton, and obviously an absolute tragedy what happened to him. But seeing him there, like, that was class. Seeing Ross Stewart when he broke through, and you think, this guy's definitely got something about him. Never in a million years would have said it would have carried him all the way to the Scotland national team. But it's great seeing that, and that's something that Albion Rovers have had in recent years that perhaps not that many other clubs. I suppose if you were to sit and write them down, you'd probably have. But that's that degree of excitement that this diamond in the rough has been uncovered and is playing in Cope Bridge. Yes, do you think, just always like posing a question to you before we move on, where are the Rovers going to finish this season?
I think if they win on Saturday against Bonnyrigg, then they almost certainly have ninth place sewn up. I think if they lose, I do think it'll actually be quite difficult for them to overtake them again. Mm. I think Bonnyrigg are in a slightly better form at this moment in time. Not that I think Bonnyrigg are particularly any great shakes. I think this Saturday is key. And I do think the winner of Saturday's game will finish ninth.
It's weird. It's like, if in a 10th place battle, I would fancy Bonnyrigg to win the playoffs more than would Albion Rovers. I still think they'd both win, but if I had to put a deposit for a new car on, I would fancy if Albion Rovers would be in more peril than Bonnyrigg, if you know what I mean.
I think that Brechin would be either.
Nah, I can't even see it. I think that there's something about, there's something mucky about Bonnyrigg, something mucky that I quite admire about them. Like, I refuse to believe they've played an entertaining game all season. I simply refuse to believe that they have played a match this season that's made people go, wow, I really enjoyed that.
Are you disregarding a Highland League side that has Kevin McHattie playing for them? More fool you.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Do you reckon when Botty Biabi went down to Swansea, he thought, wow, I wonder in like 7 or 8 years' time, we'll be playing at Glebe Park?
No, he definitely wasn't thinking that.
Probably not. Probably not. I suppose I'm starting to think, what's the best thing that's happened for Bonnyrigg this season? That goal they scored against Stenistreet, did you ever see it? The boy Bradley Barrett hit a thing for about 35 yards, hit the crossbar and went in.
I don't know if I did. It was a goalkeeper at fault. Like every goal that Stenistreet let in this season, the goalkeeper's been at fault.
Unusually, no. This was just, honestly, man, you could have had Edwin van der Sar and Gigi Buffon both playing in goals and neither of them would have saved it. It's just one of those ones. It was stunning. Absolutely stunning. It's one of the best goals I've seen scored at Oak Oval. It's the best goal I've seen scored at Oak Oval this season.
Well, there you go.
Probably in a couple of years, actually. And I don't say that lightly. Now, we'll finish up tonight's podcast by going outside of our wheelhouse. Normally, Sean and I are, we're SPFL truthers. Let's be honest, we're very critical of non-league truthers, but you and I ourselves, we're SPFL truthers. So you can't criticise one without taking a bit of the heat yourself. But we're going to tentatively dip our toes into the Lowland League because yesterday news dropped that the Open Goal Media Company, of course, the very successful podcast fronted by Simon Ferry, the media company have entered into a partnership at the start of the season with Broomhill FC. That partnership has been withdrawn. The two parties, I thought they'd gone into a three-year partnership. I'm sure I'd read that somewhere. I couldn't find that substantiated anywhere else. I went on the Broomhill website. I'm sure it was a three-year partnership. But nevertheless, that sponsorship is coming to an end at the end of the season. It was confirmed today by Open Goal themselves. They put a statement out on the Broomhill website. And just Certainly, a lot of people have had a lot to say about this. Social media is perhaps the most interesting place to discuss it because that's where most of the discussion is. But I think there's quite a lot of nuance to this discussion that might be lost there. So I think it's quite important that we have a wee chat about it because it's certainly the biggest thing happening in the Lowland League so far this season.
I would say so. I can understand. I mean, let's face it, from the comments I saw, there was a lot of kind of glee taken from the fact that it doesn't seem to have worked out. There seems to be a lot of criticism about the fact that Simon Ferry and his management team are not going to be there next term. In terms of the ire that's been kind of, let me get this right anyway. In terms of the criticism that Ferry has come under, a lot of it has been about the fact that they're saying, oh, well, he's only, him and his management team have only ever been in it for their own reasons, like quite selfish reasons that they wanted to get involved in Broomhill. What I would say about that is I don't think, and as much as it's been like a kind of weird, unique scenario, I totally get that, the fact that there's been documentaries made, etc., etc. Very few managers get involved with the clubs for reasons of benevolence. Like, most managers turn up at a football club because they want to manage a better football club in 2 years. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, Simon Ferry, yes, he wanted to have a kind of online output from what he was doing. But at the same time, he still wanted to make a success of what he was doing. I think if you wanted to take aim at anybody, I would say you would probably take aim at George Fraser.
Yeah, he's the general manager of Broomhill.
The general manager of Broomhill. And the reason I say that is the questions that we had at the time in terms of Open Goal getting involved at Broomhill was, what happens to the club when Open Goal and Simon Ferry specifically move on, because it was probably only ever going to end in three different ways. What if Open Goal were terrible this season? Let's say after 20 games had won two, like, would they be able to dismiss Simon Ferry? How would that have worked? The alternative, the kind of flip side of that was, let's say Open Goal had won 18 of the first 20 games and Queen of the South approached them and said, right, Simon, we want you, Simon Ferry, we want you to manage us for the end of the season. What would have happened at that point? I suppose the middle ground is, what would happen to Broomhill if Simon Ferry just thinks to himself, you know something, I don't really fancy this anymore. I don't know if it's for me if he moves to Darvel, which seems to be the suggestion that might happen, that might not happen in terms of assisting there. He just thinks it's not for him. Again, what happens to that club? And I suppose obviously, we'll get to the statement, but Broomhill, so I don't know what's went on behind the scenes, but we know that somebody like Mozza plays, for example, Mozza. Now, let's face it, we had criticism of the interview you had with George Fraser when they talked about the Colt teams on the podcast. However, he was passionate about Broomhill, he was passionate about the Lowland League, and when any club in Scottish football is reliant on volunteers. Mozza is no longer at Broomhill. I don't know if there's other people behind the scenes that are no longer there. So I suppose if you were still involved in Broomhill or if you were a Broomhill fan, it feels like they are back to square one, but potentially have fewer people behind the scenes that were there at the get-go. Yeah. So I don't know. As much as the statement that came out for George Fraser today felt like a positive thing, I don't know if this scenario and this experience and this experiment has done them any good whatsoever.
That was a lot there, Sean. I wish you'd said it in chunks, or at least gave me a time to interject. That's okay. We'll talk about, I suppose, we'll go back to talk about those three scenarios that you mentioned there, because that was my thoughts as well there. That I thought, I'm sure I read it was a 3-year partnership. I didn't think it was just for one season. I'm sure it was for 3 seasons. The concern I had from the outset, was that it's very gimmicky, right? And I have no doubt that Simon Ferry, going into his intentions, were to make as big a success of it that as he could have done. But the only reason people the interest in that was there because Simon Ferry's the manager, and that's a very dangerous position to be in because, like, players come and go, managers come and go, but supporters are there for supporters are there for life. I'll take that back. Managers come and go, players come and go. So although they did have like record crowds against like Brewer Rangers, for instance, 1,500 people at the first round of Scottish Cup tie, that's impressive, particularly for a team like that. Would they have got the same crowd had Simon Ferry not been the manager?
No,
they wouldn't have. So the big that's always the question: what happens when he's not there? And
but I think you already have the answer. Nobody's interested because in terms of how Open Goal sold themselves to George Fraser, you have a podcast that can sell out the Hydro, and I would imagine there's some kind of, listen, we've got a huge draw online. We are able to sell at the Hydro. We think that we can bring
a
big chunk of these fans to Broomhill, to Open Goal Broomhill games. And to a degree, a small degree, at the start of the season, it kind of did translate in terms of the decent crowds. Certainly in the Scottish Cup, they had pretty big crowds. In terms of what they're getting now, like it's already back down to a couple of hundred. And when Simon Ferry side departs, you presume it'll be even less than that.
You're right. I think it was. I think I don't want to stereotype the people who watch Open Goal, but I imagine it's going to be sort of Rangers and Celtic supporters. I think that's who the audience is aimed at. Certainly, the split in the panels and so on that seems to be aimed at a Rangers and Celtic supporting audience. And I think that was why the games were played on Friday nights. You know, not to clash with any other games. So come along on a Friday night, let's have a laugh and so on. So it was designed specifically to appeal to fans to go different. However, so you're playing in Broadwood, so there's the first difficulty. You're not playing in Glasgow where, I mean, there's Rangers Celtic fans everywhere, but Broadwood, not a great stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, like, let's be honest, in the fact, Broadwood's not a great away day because to get to train, it's a long walk for the train station. There's no pubs on the way there. You can drive to, it's been very easy to drive to, but I mean, who wants to like drive to the football like all the time?
Very cold, of my experience. Very cold.
They had to keep on winning. Mm-hmm. That was the big thing. They had to keep on winning to maintain people's interest. And while they were doing well in the Scottish Cup, if I'm looking at the results here, Sean, it seemed to be like after beating Bucky Thistle in the Scottish Cup, results have really tailed off. That they beat Bucky Thistle, that was on the 22nd of October. Since then, they've only won four games since. And like, if you were a Rangers Celtic supporter who would go to Ibrox or Celtic Park on the Saturday, go to this on the Sunday, you're watching a poor standard of football starring largely, you obviously heard of Kirk Broadfoot and maybe like Ryan Conroy, Gary Fraser, but you're watching a standard of football that's poor with players you've never heard of against players that you've never heard of, players you've no real emotional attachment to. And that's palatable when you're winning, but when the winning stops, what happens? Yeah. Now, you mentioned about the dwindling crowds. I watched the highlights of the game against Trenent. Trenent beat them 2-1 at Broadwood, and the cameras pointing into the crowd. There could only have been about 150, 200 people there, which is a long, long way away from the heyday against like Brewer Rangers and Aloe Athletic at the Cup. In the cup. Now, like, the obviously people are saying that they've got a massive budget, like they've got the biggest budget in the league. I dispute that because I don't think that's necessarily reflective of the players that are in the park. I think that like Kirk Broadfoot, you'd imagine he'd be in a decent wage, but a lot of the guys wouldn't. Let's be honest, if they were playing the biggest wage in the division, they wouldn't have fucking David Wilson playing in goals. Now, David Wilson was at Stenhouse Muir last season. He seems like a nice enough boy, but he's watching the highlights against Trenent, he cost them both goals. Came out for a punch and missed it. And the other one, somebody hit a cross that went over his head and into the net. And this is happening on a weekly basis. You're not got the biggest budget in the division and then having David Wilson playing in goal. So I would dispute that. But I'd heard that Ferry just wasn't really into management. Like, he'd given management a shot, didn't fancy it. He's supposed to be a really good coach, but didn't fancy management. But the idea is like that you can just the whole venture just falls to pieces off the back of something like they don't fancy it anymore, then you're like, what is this? What does it stand for? You know?
But by the same token, like, Sammy Ferry is allowed to think, listen, I don't know if this is for me. And that's just it. It was such a weird situation in terms of, so I said that managers don't turn up for benevolent reasons. But that's the thing. Generally when a manager leaves Steny or Raith Rovers or Annan or any club, one of two things happens. Either that manager's performed poorly and somebody comes in and does a wee bit better, or they've performed really well and somebody comes in and maybe they don't do as well. We have a situation here where Simon Ferry is going to leave Broomhill, and then we're not entirely sure how Broomhill are going to exist without him.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I'm not entirely sure that's Simon Ferry's fault.
No, that's right. You are entitled to be like, I don't fancy this anymore. I mean, say he was just like Simon Ferry was managing Alloa, and like Open Goal had nothing to do with it. It was just purely Simon Ferry managing his own, and was like, you know, someone, I don't fancy this anymore. Then I suppose you're entitled to do that.
Another thing is, I looked back, so without being any kind of expert on anything, never mind the Lowland League, this is shaping up to be one of Broomhill's poorest ever seasons, and all of their weird kind of existence and their weird kind of guises. So they've finished 15th, they've finished 10th. Every other season, they've actually done reasonably well. Like they've generally finished maybe top five, top seven. They're actually on track to one of their poorest ever seasons. And you're right in terms of I don't think they've got the biggest budget in the Lowland League by a good margin. But I don't think it's one of the poorer ones. And the fact that they are in the bottom half something's not went right. Put it that way.
No, I do think that someone's not quite right. I think that there's perhaps like a number of things have been overestimated there, like perhaps the standard of the division, like that what it takes to succeed at that level. The kind of, I know, because like what I've heard is that Ferry is very keen on his, or certainly talks to the game in terms of wanting his players to pass the ball. That's really good if you've got the players that can do it, but sometimes you just want to just stick it in the box. And the big man, sure, Kirk Broadfoot's had to go up front a couple of times just when they're chasing the game. So I think they've perhaps overestimated like how competitive a league it is, and I think perhaps there's the overestimation off the park as to what the appetite is to go and watch this as a football team. I think that's it. I mean, like there's perhaps a lot of sponsors involved in it as well, who are perhaps not as appealing. I look at the numbers.
They announced a sleeve sponsor recently. I doubt they would have got a sleeve sponsor if Open Goal weren't involved.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I kind of look at the numbers on, I just had a wee quick glance on YouTube, and certainly the numbers on the Open Goal podcast, the Open Goal Broomhill podcast, aren't as popular as perhaps the Keeping the Ball on the Deck podcast. So there just doesn't seem to be the appetite for these guys managing a football team. Now, I don't know, Simon Ferry, if he wants to manage a game, I think that perhaps for his own interest, they don't need to be the same venture. They can be separate things. But then I can understand why Open Goal would have wanted to try and monetize that and create content off the back of it, because there would have been a lot of interest in it. It's just, unfortunately, that interest waned as soon as the results waned.
Yeah. And then we had the statement from George Fraser, which was a suggestion that actually this season has went really well, but then he was using figures that, I mean, like, ultimately, who cares? Like, they've got more social media followers. They had the biggest crowd in the first round of the Scottish Cup.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It's very much like, this is the real quiz. And this is the real quiz sort of stuff. And you're right. And it's like where Fraser says, like, we're going to build on this and we're going to like you look to use this experience like going forward. It's like how? Like, the thing is, it's like, when you think of, see the Open Goal project, like Open Goal wanting to take over a football team, right? See, had it been like Open Goal Stenhousemuir, Open Goal St Mirren, for instance, something like that, Open Goal Alloa Athletic, like that would have perhaps been a lot less palatable than had it been Broomhill.
No, why? Because there's far fewer people to object.
Like, the thing is, But it's like the clubs. These clubs have represented something for decades, for over 100 years in these cases. Like Broomhill, a new club. That's not the issue, though. It's like Broomhill don't represent anything. They don't represent anything. Like the BSC Glasgow, where the first incantation of that. That was a noble idea to represent an area of Glasgow that isn't like there's tons of teams around, but to represent the Broomhill area of Glasgow to have effectively quite similar to what Spartans do, I'm sure, like an Edinburgh version of Spartans, where you have effectively like players from children's up to teenagers, and it's a pathway. Like you do well, and you can get all the way into the BSC Glasgow first team. And it got to the stage where I think it was under Stephen Swift, but prior to him joining Stenhouse Muir, where that was no longer the case, and more players were being brought in from elsewhere. So you would see guys who'd been let go by like Rangers, for instance, Rangers Celtic or full-time football, fall right through the cracks at the SPFL into Lone League, would end up playing for a team like BSC Glasgow ahead of the players that had been in the youth team. So I'm sure that's what caused the schism in the board, and that's why BSC Glasgow, like, they broke away. That's why BSC Glasgow changed their name to Broomhill. This team, this current team, BSC Glasgow, have effectively started their own senior team that's playing in the, I think it's the bottom tier of the Western Scotland.
I don't know where they are now, but certainly when there was that split, they went to amateur status in whatever league
They're right at the bottom of the Western Scotland League. But I think this is that's the true version of BSC Glasgow, which is this altruistic community side that is effectively for the community of Broomhill. They play at Knightsbridge, which is fucking certainly a lot closer to Broomhill than the Indodrill or Broadwood. So it's very easy. I mean, they don't represent anything, and there will be people that will be involved with the club. And like Moza, for instance, Moza's now started his own football team, Tullabuddy St. Serfs. Because I'm sure that's a large area that doesn't have a football team, and they're going to get off the go. And I've met Moza. Moza's a really nice guy. I think there's perhaps that he got quite a lot of flack. People were annoyed about him because they didn't like that George Fraser for waving the Colts through. He was the chairman of the Lone League board that voted the Colts in. He was there when Open Goal took over. So Moza was a bit of a lightning rod for a lot of people's criticism. And I think that was really unfair, because he was just like, he is just like a nice guy who is, I don't watch Twitch, but a reasonably popular Twitch streamer that wanted to use that and marry it with a football team, which was at the time fairly unique. Mm-hmm. And Scottish football, somebody who dedicated a lot of time to Broomhill, he was a bit of a lightning rod for that. But as a club, they don't represent anything. And I think that with someone like George Fraser there, who seems to just want to, probably sees himself as a disruptor. That's how he would see himself. Like, it's very easy to start these partnerships. And what we would say is like fair play for trying something different and bring them on board. But it has gone like I expected it to go.
Do you know something? George Fraser has now had, as far as I'm aware, and again, I am no expert in terms of George Fraser in the Lone League and Broomhill, but he's now had two big ideas, as far as I'm aware, which is that the B teams would be in the Lone League for 1 year, and he could bring an Open Goal to Broomhill. Neither have worked out. He remember needs to consult more people when it comes to his ideas.
Mm-hmm. I saw on Twitter a lot of people were like, "Well, it's the original the fans who were there before Open Goal. I feel sorry for."
They're fucking. They're about 49.
Aye, parents, like people's parents and their friends. I saw some people as well saying that the young boys that have joined them, they were sold a dream and it's been taken away from them. It's a fucking Lowland League. If the guys leave at the end of the season or there's no money to pay for them, they'll get other clubs, no bother. It's fine. And Broomhill, if he's right, Broomhill will still endure in one way or another. I do not think there'll be any interest there. I would be astonished, genuinely astonished, if anyone who has a season ticket, who went to watch them, got a season ticket off the back because they're an Open Goal fan, is sticking around for next season.
No chance. Absolutely no chance. They're literally back to where they were two seasons ago.
Aye. It's, I hope we've done that. I think that's a fair discussion about it. I think we've looked at that quite level. I mean, that's about 20 minutes we spoke.
I think so. I don't think we've went in two-footed. I think we've been rational. I think we've been objective. Mm-hmm. And I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's like, and it'll be interesting to see what, I think it'll be interesting to see what Open Goal do next as a brand. I think that the show at the Hydro certainly felt like top of the mountain, which is an incredible, I mean, we just started off as Simon Ferry interviewing his mates. Like, to go from that to there, that's an incredible achievement. And it just feels like, oh, what do we do? What do we do next?
Let's face it, Open Goal is Simon Ferry. If Simon Ferry is now heavily involved, if what transpires is that Simon Ferry becomes heavily involved in Darvel, then he maybe becomes less involved in Open Goal. So I'd be interested to see what happens here.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that Simon Ferry, I quite like. I've actually said all right to him a couple of times when I've seen him out and about, and I actually would love to go for a pint with him. He seems like quite a cool guy. I think he has got a lot to offer. I think that I don't know how palatable Open Goal would be if he's not involved. Mm-hmm. Maybe just like, maybe that would be like the equivalent of like Broomhill, like just or they become the real Open Goal or something. I don't know. I don't know. But I hope that's fair, and I'd hate to think that we're having this discussion to because there seems to be some perceived rivalry between like a view from the terrace and Open Goal. Certainly, that's never been the case on my part. I just think this is an interesting discussion, and it's just I do want to make that clear. I think it's an interesting discussion, and it's not to say haha, get it up you or anything like that, because that's not what I want to convey at all. I think it's an interesting thing that's happened that deserves being discussed.
There isn't a rivalry. However, I do think that Kevin Kyle's pinned tweet, which is a kitchen-based hoverboard almost disaster where he nearly kills his child, is very funny. It's a pinned tweet.
No wonder. Because it's like I had gone on Kevin Kyle's Twitter page to see if he'd said anything about the news today, and he hadn't, but his pinned tweet, it still is him chucking an infant into an oven. It's fucking hilarious. As soon as I saw it, I burst out laughing and sent it to Sean.
Throw his newborn around like a ragdoll. Incredible.
Well, Sean, I think that was a decent podcast.
Yeah, I think so.
I think we'll wrap it up there. We would like to, if you want to hear more about Sean and I talking about Scottish football, please go over to the Patreon. Sean and I are going to be spending about 20 minutes or so discussing the Challenge Cup final that's taking place on Sunday between Raith Rovers and Hamilton Accies. I will be asking Sean a lot of questions, and it's going to be really fun.
Don't ask me too many questions about Hamilton.
Okay, you can ask me questions about Hamilton then, because I saw them recently and I was not impressed. But we're going to do that. And so remember, if you do want to hear that, please subscribe. There's fucking tons
loads
of stuff on the Patreon.
Absolutely
loads of stuff on the Patreon.
Some of it's good.
Some inspired me to commit an act of theft. I won't go into too much more details after that.
I've heard that story. It was very funny.
Yeah, it's like, you ever remember the story about Bobby Moore in Colombia? Imagine that, but on a much lower level. The light-fingered England captain. But anyway, we will leave it at that. Thank you, take care, and enjoy your football, but please do so respectfully. Thank you very much. Sports Social Podcast Network.